Welcome to Podland, the last word in podcasting news. It's the 25th of November, 2021. Happy Thanksgiving, if you believe in that sort of thing. I'm James Cridland, the editor of podnews.net here in Australia.
And I'm Sam Sethi from River Radio, the podcast first radio station here in the UK.
Hi, I'm Lisa Laporte. I'm the CEO of Twit TV. I've been running a podcast network for 13 years, and I'll be on later to tell you all about what it's like to run a tech podcast network.
And also this episode, Franco Solerio talking about the Castomatic app. They will. Podland is sponsored by Buzzsprout, used by over 105,000 active podcasters to host, promote and track your podcast.
Podland is a weekly podcast where James and I delve deeper into the week's podcasting news. And the big news this week, James, is that the Copenhagen-based podcast production company Podimo has secured $78 million of funding. The subscription company hosts more than 950 original shows and plans to move into new markets. James, that's massive, isn't it? $78 million?
Yeah, $78 million is quite a large amount of cash. So this company is based in Copenhagen in Denmark and has a bunch of bright people working there. They were the only company that ended up being in the top 10 of the Apple podcast subscriptions chart that were based outside of the US and Canada, which is nice to see. And their channel that was in there was for some of their German stuff that they do. They're in quite a few European countries, and it'll be interesting to see how they continue to grow out. Oh, and they're in Latin America too, I believe, too.
Is one of their USPs the fact that they translate into local language, which is giving them an advantage over, I guess, Spotify and Apple, who aren't really focusing on international language right now?
Yeah, I think that's certainly one of their USPs. I mean, Spotify is doing a bunch of international stuff too, but what Podimo have done is they've jumped into partnerships with a wide variety of different companies, including iHeartRadio, to take some of their successful shows and turn them into shows in other languages. And I think that that's a sensible thing to be doing.
$78 million sounds like a lot. Well, somebody you wrote about has got even more. Verbit, a voice AI platform focused on transcriptions, has raised $250 million in funding, which for transcriptions seems a lot.
Yeah.
Who are Verbit? I don't think I've come across them myself.
They do an awful lot of transcripts and transcriptions for, you know, court cases and for investor meetings and all of those sorts of things. That's what Verbit's core business has been. And they're also looking at doing more in the media space too. $250 million to get better transcriptions is a good thing. So that's quite a lot of money, that, isn't it?
Yeah, that's some real proper beer money, that is.
I mean, you know, it's $250 million, but clearly it's not $3.5 billion.
Now, there's the big boys with the big money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did he mean to tell us? This is Spotify CFO Paul Vogel, who was speaking at a conference in Boston. Do you think he meant to let the cat out of the bag?
I think it's in their SEC returns that they've got that amount of money in cash for acquisitions. I mean, that's an awful lot of money. And he was basically saying, we are going to be acquiring more companies in the future. I know a very good podcast newsletter. We're going to be acquiring more companies in the future. And, you know, we think that, there's still money to be spent in this market. So to me, I found that absolutely fascinating. But yeah, $3.5 billion that they're basically saying. He was standing at a conference for CFOs in Boston, in Massachusetts, in the US, and he stood there and he said, podcasting was this business that for 20 years didn't change. It was a simple RSS feed, no way to do anything different. I mean, podcasts are 18 years old, not 20 years old, so slight exaggeration there. And that simple RSS feed actually can include all of the enhancements that Spotify has added to it. And one of the fun things that I might do over this Thanksgiving period is to do a little article which is basically going, here are all of the new things that Spotify are doing. Here's the equivalent podcasting 2.0 namespace tag that they could have used, just to really highlight that there isn't really anything special that Spotify is doing, apart from, of course, building it into their walled garden.
Now, we can speculate. Would you say Podimo would be a good acquisition? It feels to me like a VC play to build up the company for an acquisition. That's generally the Peter Thiel model, pump and dump, which is build market share or grow market share, make yourself attractive by getting the money in the front door quickly, and then sell on the back or IPO. I mean, who is Paul Vogel looking to buy, or who is Spotify looking to buy, if it's not somebody like Podimo?
Indeed. I mean, Podimo makes a ton of their own material. They've got agreements with all kinds of different podcasters, so it could be that sort of company. And of course, you know, if they've got $78 million worth of funding, well, you know, Gimlet was a bit more than that, as was Parcast. So maybe it's another one of those. I suppose the question is Spotify still interested in acquiring more content companies like that? Have they had enough problems with acquiring large companies like The Ringer and Gimlet and so on and so forth? Or are Spotify more interested in doing a bit more careful acquisitions of individual shows? You know, I don't know what the answer is, but it's certainly interesting seeing that. And I think particularly this is a company which has its roots in Europe, doesn't have its roots in the US. So if Spotify is looking to grow their European market share or to grow their Latin American market share, then perhaps Podimo would be an interesting company to buy.
Acquisitions don't always seem to work, though, because this week The Verge was reporting that Radio Public, which was purchased by Acast in February, is broken for many users and has been for months. So who is Radio Public, James, and why is it broken?
Well, so Radio Public is quite a good little set of tools for podcasters. It was made 3 or 4 years ago by a chap called Jake Shapiro, who now works for Apple Podcasts. And that's the reason why you've not heard from Jake Shapiro for 2 years, because as soon as you move to Apple Podcasts, you can't say a thing to anybody at all. Acast essentially bought the Radio Public product. To be fair, Radio Public had sat and done not very much. A chap called Matt McDonald had sat and, you know, kept the thing running, but that was about it. Hadn't done an awful lot of work in terms of that. Radio Public, frankly, hadn't had very much investment put into it, and clearly hasn't had any investment put into it since it's been purchased by Acast. So that's a shame. Acast contacted me, even though I was reporting a story from The Verge. They contacted me and they said, the issue resulted from a configuration change made by certain podcast hosting providers, which isn't actually true, and affected a small number of podcasters using such providers, and we fixed that. And we're also looking at how we better do customer service to Radio Public users, which is fine, and it's good to see that they've actually fixed it. But, you know, Radio Public is clearly a forgotten product. And, you know, with any of these products, the question is for how long you keep those products going, I guess.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I read this week, I don't know if you read it as well, which I thought was a good read, and if you haven't, I highly recommend it, was Matt Deegan had a good take on what he thought M&A was going to look like, not just from Spotify's point of view, from the 3.5 billion war chest, but he also had a good review on why American companies successfully, like Wondery, as you said, Gimlet, Parcast, and all the others, get sold, but there doesn't seem to be an acquisition outside of the US in terms of making itself attractive, certainly not in the UK.
Yeah, I think that's going to change. I think that's going to change in the new year. My suspicion is that we will see more acquisitions. I mean, only today, Edison Research has announced that they are rolling out the Infinite Dial research into the UK. That's always a great help, because that means that data that US investors are comfortable with will now be visible in the UK as well. So that'll be a good thing too. I suspect that we will see a number of acquisitions across Europe over next year. And I think it's just a point that, you know, the European podcasting market is just slightly behind, a couple of years behind where the US market is. So my suspicion is that we'll see a fair amount of that sort of thing. We're certainly seeing larger companies, you know, appearing now. You know, we interviewed Andrew Crisati from Audi a couple of weeks ago. There's the other big crowdcast company in Salford in the UK, obviously Podimo in Copenhagen, a large number of different companies in France as well, which always do their own thing too. So I suspect that we'll see a fair amount of that happening next year. We should go back and check a year later to find out how wrong I've been.
And talking of a year, I forgot to mention, we're a year old, James. Podland.
We are a year old. Yes, happy birthday, Mr. Sethi. Yes, indeed, we are an entire year old, which is a wonderful thing. Yes, and what a year it's been.
We should do one of those Christmas reviews, maybe. That would, because no one else is going to be doing one of those.
No, yeah, nobody's going to be doing one of those. That'll be a new and bright content idea for the 21st century.
Exactly.
Yes.
Now, one strange thing that Chris Messina spotted, and I'm sure you did as well, was Netflix and Spotify have come together to launch a Netflix hub on Spotify, and it includes playlists for Netflix shows and some additional audio. What are Netflix doing on Spotify?
Well, I mean, you've been on record on this podcast in the past saying that Netflix are going to buy Spotify at some point. And I think you may be right. And perhaps this is just the first little date. This is the first dance between Netflix and Spotify. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, if you're a fan of Netflix stuff and you want to go and find playlists and stuff like that around your favorite Netflix shows, then Spotify has now added that sort of thing. Spotify was saying that, basically there's a ton of user-generated playlists and a ton of, you know, those sorts of things going on anyway. So, for example, within the first 2 weeks of Squid Game coming onto Netflix, Spotify's listeners had created more than 22,500 themed playlists around Squid Game. So, wowee, there's a thing. So being able to pull those into a Netflix hub so that you can see a little bit more of that is probably quite a nice idea. And that, of course, is one of the unique things that Spotify has that other platforms don't have, is just that wealth of user-generated playlists. Yes, YouTube Music has got user-generated playlists as well, but they're all unique to individual platforms, and perhaps that's one of Spotify's bits of secret sauce there.
Mm. They won't bring video across, will they? I mean, I know that Spotify started to expand its video player. You won't see more video coming across from Netflix, would you?
Perhaps, I guess, in time, if this first date is a success, you could perhaps see the Joe Rogan podcast appearing on Netflix in the future. Why would that not happen? So it's early doors, but well worth watching, I think.
Hmm. Now, a story that I was surprised about, because I'm not really a Samsung fan, you know, I don't use those strange Android tools that you use. But Samsung have they suddenly entered the market? They're just so off my radar. But this week they launched a listen tab here in Europe, and now you can add your own podcasts into UK, Germany, Switzerland, Austria, Spain, France and Italy. So they've really gone for a European play. I did add some of my podcasts just to see what it was like. It's pretty simple to do. But why is Samsung getting into this market now?
I think one of the things that Samsung have been doing over the last year is getting more involved into content. And Samsung Free, which is, I believe, an app which is automatically installed on every Samsung Galaxy phone, has been available in the US for some time and in Europe for some time. They added a podcasts tab about 3 or 4 months ago in the US, and they've just added that now in some of these European countries and in the UK as well. So from that point of view, that's quite interesting seeing. I mean, Samsung, if you look at their smart TVs, for example, they've added a thing called Samsung Live, which is a set of TV channels that you can watch. So if you're in the UK, for example, you can watch CNN International on your Samsung smart TV and a bunch of other channels as well. They've helpfully not geo-blocked those individual streams as well, which is very handy. Thank you, Samsung. So there's a bunch of that sort of stuff going on. So it does look as if Samsung is realizing that, yes, they're in the hardware game, but they can also be in the content game as well. So interesting to see what that means in terms of podcasts. I gather that podcasts are doing quite well in this new app, some of the podcast hosts are seeing quite a lot of downloads from this new Samsung app. So should be interesting to see what happens there.
And they haven't stopped really on the phone. The Samsung Smart TV has a new app from Deezer where you can also add podcasts. So I decided to go to Deezer because I ignored Deezer for years and added some podcasts there as well. So maybe it's just a good way of getting people to add more podcasts. But why Deezer? I mean, it seems a very odd partnership.
Yeah, well, you know, anybody can launch an app for a Samsung Smart TV if you can be bothered to code the thing. And Deezer have obviously felt that it's a good plan to refresh their app. They had an app in the past, but they've obviously felt that it's a good plan to refresh that app and make it better. And that's what they've done. And that now includes podcasts. So if you're a Deezer subscriber, then you can punch up your favorite podcast on your Samsung Smart TV. I'm in the market for a new TV when they finished bashing my house apart. So I'm quite looking forward to working out whether or not I take the plunge and go back to a Samsung TV, which was quite nice, or whether or not I should be going for something else. Frankly, I just want a large, decent screen that I can plug in a couple of HDMI cables into. So probably won't be a Samsung Smart TV, but we'll see.
It's Black Friday, James, you know. Maybe now's the time to open that wallet of yours.
It is Black Friday, but no. There are still two more walls that need to be taken down in this house, and so I'm desperately waiting to until all of that is finished prior to buying any more electricity gadgetry. So, yeah, but still, there you go.
Sounds like you should just move house. It sounds quicker.
You're absolutely right, but can't afford to move house. My goodness. House prices here in Brisbane have gone up by 25% in the last year. 25%! It's all gone a little bit mad as people have been desperately trying to escape Sydney and Melbourne. So, yeah, it's definitely the place to be doing renos in, I'll tell you.
No, I thought it was more to do with the Olympics coming to you boys, but there you go.
Well, yes, and that too.
Now, new technology company Sonnet could give old podcasts a new boost of life. They've got a new product, an archival retrieval that automatically checks trending topics to find relevant podcasts from your archives to promote or even clip the audios for you. Have you tried Sonnet? Because this sounds very much like Disco from Headliner.
Yeah, this I think is a similar thing to Disco from Headliner. What this enables you to do is it basically goes through your entire podcast archive, but it automatically works out what is currently trending on social media and then works out what content you have that will go with whatever is actually trending. So say, for example, that there's a big, nice, positive news story coming out of Austria at the moment. Not that there is, but let's just assume that there is. If you've done shows about Austria in the past, then it will automatically clip a nice bit from that particular podcast, will make a video to go with it, and will essentially allow you to share that piece of audio on your social media platforms completely automatically. It's an Australian thing, comes from Melbourne. And interestingly, the company which runs it, Sonnent, was invested in by SCA, by one of the big commercial broadcasters here. So clearly they see that there's some future there in how it works. But to me, that looks like a very clever way of using, you know, new technology to grab old content that you have and get more value out of it. I think it's very clever.
Bleed the content, as they say, bleed it dry. Now, Chartable has launched Smart Feeds, a new tool that mirrors your RSS feed and makes it easier to switch podcast hosts and enable Chartable analytics. Brian Barletta from Sounds Profitable was raving about this as a feature. He thought it was great. I'm not quite sure I understand why you need to mirror your RSS feed and what the benefit is.
Well, I think there are two benefits here. So there are a few companies that allow you to mirror your RSS feed. And what that essentially means is instead of giving out your podcast host's name and address when you're listing your podcast, which means that you are rather more stuck with that podcast host, you give out Chartable's mirror instead. And that then means that you can move where your podcast is, and you don't have to tell anybody. You don't have to hope that everybody realizes that your podcast feed has changed, because they're all getting it from this mirror. So there's a good benefit there in terms of that. I think what Chartable are doing here is they're also adding a bunch of their analytics on the top of that to make it easier for you to do the Chartable analytics and measurement that Chartable ends up doing. One of the things that I've suggested to Dave is that you take that Chartable feed, but you can also add additional podcasting 2.0 tags into that. I think that might be an interesting way of also, therefore, enabling podcast index tags for podcast hosts that don't currently support them. So that might be quite an interesting plan. To me, I think that that's quite a neat and quite a clever thing that they're doing. CurioCaster has a CurioCaster RSS generator, which does exactly that too, by the way. But it's a self-hosted thing, so you need a server to host that on. But that might be another alternative if that's the sort of thing that you're having a look at.
Now, Brian, again, talking of our friend Brian, he was a little bit miffed this week about Apple. Have you given Apple any ratings recently for their app?
I haven't, but by the looks of it, quite a few people have, and they've given some very high ratings, and they've said, "We love this podcast," which isn't really what they should be rating the app on. They should be rating the app on the app and then going into the podcast to rate that. But what that is essentially meant is that Apple has ended up now, I think it's at 4.8. It was really low. It was, you know, in the ones. But some quite clever... I'm sure that they haven't done this on purpose, but some quite clever mistakes by Apple have meant that people have seen the vote, give us a rating, and assumed that give us a rating actually means a great podcast and not you're actually rating the app itself. So it's quite interesting that.
Badly worded or well worded, depending on which way you're looking at it.
Yes, quite possibly. But I mean, you know, Apple is fascinating. The Apple podcast app is fascinating because in this week's Sounds Profitable, Brian talks very much around the amount of promotion that Apple is currently giving Apple Podcasts paid subscriptions. And that is where they are really doubling down on the promotion that they're giving. And what Brian was suggesting is that you should probably look at a paid channel, because that way Apple will promote the heck out of you. So maybe that's what we should be doing. I don't know. But I thought it was an interesting point by Brian, having a look at that.
Now, Verbal, a platform I've not really used myself, has come out of beta and it's adding more advertising to the platform. The company offers revenue share, but says it's currently honouring requests to keep your station ad-free. And of course, it's doing what everyone else seems to be doing, which is click here to claim your podcast. Who or what is Verbal, James?
I think it's trying to be another YouTube of podcasting. So it's pulling in a bunch of RSS feeds, but it's also a place where you can upload individual clips of audio and do all of that stuff. It's quite a nice looking platform, seems to work quite nicely, has comments and things like that in there as well. But what it is doing is it's adding more advertising now into the platform to pay for itself. And of course, you know, that necessarily means that if you listen to Pod News on Verbal, then you might hear an ad. And that ad is going to be from Verbal, not from Pod News. So hopefully it won't be anything bad. But that's sort of, you know, where they are. I wrote a piece in my personal blog this week about the unwritten contracts between podcast apps and podcast publishers. I think that's getting close to the edge of that. I think, you know, adding audio advertising is beginning just to sort of push the boundaries there a little bit. But, you know, at least they are saying that you can opt out of that, and that's all fine.
They're not the only company that says claim your podcast here. It feels like this week for me with Samsung and Deezer and Verbal. It's everyone's going for a land grab of claim your podcast. But having said that, Good Pods, which we looked at a couple of weeks ago, have been emailing podcasters using the email addresses they found in the RSS feeds. And that's upset the Podfather a little bit, I believe. What's Good Pods done or bad pods, as they should be now called.
So Good Pods, it's a pretty good app. It's quite nicely done. But again, you know, they are asking you as podcasters to claim your feed. They're asking you to go in and enter your Patreon details or your Venmo details or any of that stuff so that you can get a tip button within the Good Pods app. And that's all fine. And the problem with RSS is that, you know, you do have to do this claiming dance with quite a lot of different places now. I suppose there's two bad things out of that. Firstly, they're just emailing the email addresses that appear in RSS feeds, which isn't actually legal in Europe, is legal in many other parts of the world, but isn't actually legal in Europe. Secondly, as Adam Curry rightly says, there's a tag for that, and it's called the podcast funding tag. And if you support it, as Pod News podcast pages do, then you can grab the Patreon information or the PayPal information or whatever it is that you want in your tip jar. You can grab that automatically from the RSS feed and put that onto the app. So that's all that basically Good Pods are doing. They've ignored the evidence of the podcast funding tag, or indeed they've ignored just looking through the description text to find any link to Patreon or to PayPal. And they're requiring you to download the app and then claim your podcast. But yeah, it's just one of those frustrating things, I guess, in terms of how RSS works and how there's no real easy way to claim a podcast through an RSS feed. And perhaps that's something that we should be having a look at, maybe.
Mm. How many companies do you think support the funding tag right now?
Companies in terms of podcast hosts or podcast apps?
Podcast apps. I was going to say you could use your new super duper filter now on Pod News to find out.
Yeah, you could do. I don't think it's as many as it should be. And I think if more podcasters were demanding that it was used, then I think that that would be helpful. I mean, again, it's the typical chicken and egg that we have in an open ecosystem where there is this new tag. It's pretty good for this sort of thing. We would like podcast hosts to use it, but podcast hosts won't do it until podcast apps are using it, and podcast apps won't use it until podcast hosts are using it. So we have this sort of, you know, impasse in terms of where we are. So, yeah, it would be really good if someone, anyone, was to put their foot forward and going, yes, we will support the podcast funding tag. And somebody like Good Pods doing that would, I think, be really helpful in the uptake of the podcast funding tag, yeah.
Well, I've got some good news for you, James, because I caught up with Franco Soleri from Castomatic, and he actually currently supports the funding tag already in the version 7. They just released version 8, and I thought I'd catch up with him to find out what was new in version 8.
Castomatic 8 is all about podcasting 2.0 features. I've been looking at podcasting 2.0 discussions on the social, on Mastodon, for some time. And at the beginning of last summer, I had to mind on what to focus. Usually, summer is a big moment to study and to work on new features. Developing software programming is not my first job. I work as a medical doctor. And usually summer work is a little slower. In August, I'm free. I'm on vacation. And usually I focus on developing. And it's the moment when new stuff come out, usually new stuff from Apple, new APIs. But this year, new APIs weren't so revolutionary. I thought that it was time. I've been studying to implement searching for new podcasts on Podcast Index. And that was really easy to add to the app. And users were very happy of this. And I thought that it would be good to look for innovation in this field, in podcasting 2.0, because I think that in a place like podcasting, which is open, which is standard, it's good to make innovation that can be brought forward from the community, from everybody. Everybody can do it. It's not an exclusive. It's something that every podcast can use, and any app can copy and do the same. And one of the most important things that I saw in podcasting 2.0 was the possibility to be supported for podcasters, for producers, to be supported by their listeners. I'm Italian. I've been podcasting since 2005. And in Italy, podcasting is a little different than from the States and from English-speaking countries, because there are not so many people in the world speaking English. I checked last day on Wikipedia, 1.5 billion persons know English as a first or a second language in the world, 1.5 billion. Only 85 million speak Italian in the world. The numbers are very little, and reaching a big enough audience so that advertisers can come to you and offer you money is very difficult. I think almost nobody in Italy does podcasting, exclusively podcasting for a living. There are people that are famous on their parts and have some money from podcasting, but there's no, I don't know, Joe Rogan, there's no Leo Laporte in Italy, there's no Adam Curry in Italy. And having an alternative, having a smooth way so that that listeners can support their favorite podcasters with no friction, automatically, directly inside the app they already use to listen to the shows, it looked to me like some sort of revolution. And I worked on that, and I'm very happy for that.
So value for value is the one thing that you have implemented here in this version. How easy was it?
It wasn't the easiest thing that I've done, but it wasn't the least difficult there. In the first days, I tried to study how to directly interact with the Lightning node. And that was very difficult because this stuff is new, is really geeky, and it's continuously evolving. Then speaking with Dave Jones, he suggested me to speak to the LMPay guys. And a team from LMPay showed me the APIs. He directed me to the documentation. He made a really good service that makes it very easy for developers to interact with, to make wallets, to send payments, to receive payments. And that what really made the Customatic possible in just a month of work. Otherwise, it was probably many months of work.
So it must have been very exciting when you first saw your first boost go straight through, the first value for value payment. Do you know who that was from?
Oh, I don't know. Obviously, I made a lot of those during the testing phase. So it's like when you're programming audio. When you're programming audio, you for days and days, you only hear static. What's wrong? And then you change a little thing and music come out. What's this? It's a miracle. And it's the same for payments for Satoshi. The first time I managed to send a payment was really a success. And I think during the testing, probably Dave Jones was the first one outside of my house that sent a boost. And it was, yes, it was very emotional.
Yes, the pod sage himself. Now, what other Podcast Index 2.0 features do you currently support?
Currently, I support searching on the podcast index, value for value, and the funding tag, where people can specify a web page where standard methods of payments are possible, PayPal, stuff like that.
You also support chapters, though, don't you?
Oh, yes, chapters, of course. I always forget about that. Yes, Customatic has been supporting MP3 chapters written inside the MP3 tags for a couple of years. And many podcasters already use those. But it wasn't that difficult. A couple of weeks of work.
And given that you're looking at the podcast index, will you be supporting the cross-app commenting that's recently been implemented by a few of the other apps?
I'm very curious about that because, yes, I would like to. I think right now we are really at the beginning. Things are moving and changing, and I'm not sure I can work on it right now, but I think it's one of the next features that I will look into it. Thinking about when it will be stable and correctly implemented, it will be very nice, very cool to have comments with timestamps, so that everybody listening to that moment of your show can see what other people commented exactly in that moment in any app they are using. It's another revolution by itself. A lot of the success of other platforms like YouTube have been built on users commenting the shows and the videos. So I think for podcasting, it would be very nice too. But it's really early right now. I'm looking into it, but I'm still not writing code for it.
And your longer-term plan with Customatic, is this something that's going to be your full-time thing going forward? Are you going to keep it or do you hope to sell it? Where do you see Customatic down the road?
My plan is to continue working on that. I developed it out of sheer passion for podcasting. I had no real favorite. I had some favorite apps to listen to podcasts, but none of those were satisfying me. And so Customatic was born a little out of that. It's the optimal podcast player for me. And if other people find the same benefit in using it, I'm really happy. So I'm not looking into an exit, into selling if Spotify tomorrow tells me Custom-O-Matic is better than their player, and it is, and they offer me a couple of millions, I would think about it. But I don't think it will never happen.
Brilliant. And Franco, please tell everyone where they can get the latest version of Custom-O-Matic 8.
Custom-O-Matic 8 is only on iOS, so on the App Store, if you search for Custom-O-Matic, it comes right in front. We have a website. It's one version behind because nobody almost looking for apps right now goes on the web. If they go to usual search engines, if you look for some app on Google, usually the link to the page on the App Store comes before their own website. So just look for it on Google or on the App Store.
I have to ask, because James has got a fancy new Google Pixel phone. Is there a plan to have an Android?
Oh, no, not possible. Right now, nobody knows, but I'm really at point zero on developing on Android. I don't even know right now what software, what IDE, what programming language you have to use. So it would, just to get to the point where Custom-O-Matic is right now, would need many years of work. So it's really difficult. But you never know if somebody one day will come and tell me, I can work on it.
No, don't worry. It's only James who uses Android anyway, so it's not a problem.
It would be good to have that audience too, but it's really not possible for me alone.
Franco, thank you so much for your time from beautiful Italy. Take care.
It was a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Franco Soleri, who is the developer of Custom-O-Matic. I've got it on my iPod Touch. It's just a shame that, of course, it's not actually available for Android, not at least yet. But great to see value for value added. Might be good to see, you know, comments and stuff like that. But it looks really neat. It looks really smart. So, I think Franco is doing a good job there.
Yeah, I didn't realise he's a doctor by day and a developer by night. Quite exciting.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it?
It's amazing.
Yes, it's a very strange old thing.
He was also talking about bringing out, or looking at least, to bring out co-comments into version 9. So that will be good for them as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, any podcast app which looks as good as Custom-O-Matic looks, you know, it supports things like episode images and, you know, all of that stuff as well. Anything that looks, you know, as smart as that also supports all of the podcasting 2.0 features that it can possibly do would be really good. So, you know, the more of these new podcast apps that look really nice is, I think, a really good thing. You know, Fountain is a nice looking podcast app. I think Custom-O-Matic is probably best of the bunch in terms of how it looks. So good to see, you know, that doing very well.
Now it's that time, James. It's the time for Boostergram Corner.
And now, as the French say, it is time for Le Boost.
Oh, it is. Yes, it's time for Boostergram Corner. And thank you to a bunch of Boostergrams that we've had this week. A Boostergram, if you don't know, is a tip of some cryptocurrency with a little message that you can send through a decent new podcast app. If you don't have one of those podcast apps, podnews.net/new podcast apps. What have we got there? Adam Curry is talking about one of your friends there, Sam.
Yes, Mr. Kevin Marks, the inimitable and wonderfully intelligent Kevin Marks, actually, who you don't like there because of OAuth, but otherwise Adam says he's an unsung hero of podcasting. I'm trying to think why he would be the unsung hero, but can't remember what Kevin might have developed.
Ah, well, there you go. He's not anything to do with OPML, was he, as well?
No, that was good old Dave Weiner, but Kevin did come up with a lot of micro formats, and he did a lot of work in the open standards community. Yeah, so Kevin did a lot of good work.
Well, excellent. I noticed that he follows me, so maybe I might ask him to come onto this particular show. Thank you, Adam, for your boost. 5,000 sats sent using CurioCaster, which is good of you. And another 2222 sats, that's all the little ducks, sent using CurioCaster as well. He's picking us up over the mention of Odeo, which I made last week, around, of course, Odeo, which is the thing that eventually eventually turned into Twitter, that Ev was the boss of, Ev and Jack. Adam says Odeo never launched. They pivoted to become Twitter. I disagree with the Podfather here, because I think that they did launch. And in fact, I've got the proof, because I've got the emails still in my Gmail account from 2004, which is basically, you know, one of them is asking me to change my password. Another one is some announcements from Ev and Jack. Another one was some new features that they were doing. So I think that they did launch, but I don't think that Odeo existed for very long. I don't remember. And I think one of the big problems with Odeo was that there wasn't an easy way to get stuff from Odeo into your iPod at the time, because there was, no, of course, no such thing as an app. So I think Odeo's time, Odeo was a bit too early. But I think that they did launch, but they didn't launch for very long. So I'll give you that, Adam. Thank you for that tweet as well.
Maybe Odeo will become part of Medium, because they seem to be getting into audio. Who knows? Now, we had one from Mere Mortals. It says, come on, fellas, there's only one other consistent booster grammar. I was restricted by the Breeze limit. MM equals Mere Mortals. So did we say something wrong?
Yes, if you remember last week, we were there going, we're not quite sure who MM is, but thank you very much. It is, of course, Kyrin from the Mere Mortals podcast, which is a very good podcast, which you should all go and have a listen to. And Kyrin, sorry for not recognising MM being Mere Mortals. Now we know.
And he's also interviewing the Podfather this week, I believe.
Oh, yes, he is. Yes, which should be really interesting. He does very good long-form interviews. He does a lot of research, having been interviewed by him. He does a lot of research into the person who he is interviewing. And one of the things that he has said to Adam is, I will try not to ask you the same old questions that you're always asked. And it must be quite frustrating for Adam to always have to answer the same old questions time and time again. What was it like at MTV? And all this kind of stuff. So that should be pretty good. So I'm looking forward to that. It may already be out. Who knows? Also, a brand new boostergram from a brand new person called One Fine Play. Thank you very much, One Fine Play. They say, would be awesome if you could set SAT boosts to auto-recur. Oscar Merry. Oh, right. Okay. So, I think the way that you would do that is just to keep on listening to your friendly podcast. And that's probably a good thing. Anyway, they liked our interview with Clever FM, and they say, love to hear their approach. Peace and love, boys. Peace and love. Hashtag Anton Deck.
Yeah, this is not catching on. I am not taking that.
It's not catching on. I'm not having that. I'm not having that. It's either Anton Deck or Bucks Fizz. I'm not having either of those two things. So thank you very much. And finally, Oscar Merry himself boosting Four Little Ducks from Fountain. Such high signal content in every episode. Can't miss a Podland. Thank you so much, Oscar. That's very kind of you.
And now, as the French say, it is time for Le Boost.
So always really good to have so many boostergrams from lots of different people. Again, as I say, podnews.net/new podcast apps is where to find a decent podcast app that supports them. And always really good to hear from Adam Curry as well, who is one of the OG, one of the old guard in terms of podcasting, but quite rare in that he is both old guard in terms of he was there at the beginning, but is also really keen in moving the industry forward. So great to hear from Adam. And another one of those people is Leo Laporte, who has put together TWIT, the This Week in Tech network, for many, many years. I last spoke to Leo in, I think, 2000 and maybe 2006. I got him speaking at a conference or other, but you managed to speak to the next best thing, Sam, haven't you?
Yeah, I caught up with Lisa Laporte, the CEO of TWIT, also his wife as well, but she wasn't his wife when they were working together originally. Lisa basically gave me the time, which was great. I'm a big fan of TWIT. I have been for many years. It's 15 years ago that they started the podcast network, so they're quite prescient in their timing. When many people dropped off the cliff with podcasting, they kept going. It was great. She talked about CPM rates, the revenue they're generating, and how they keep which shows and which shows don't. So I asked Lisa, First of all, tell me, what is Twit TV?
Twit was created by Leo Laporte, who's the founder of the network. And for full disclosure, he's also my husband. And he created this network because he wanted to cater to this particular audience. We want to cater to the tech enthusiasts and those that eat, breathe, live, consume, and work in tech. So we are a podcast network. We have 13 shows at this particular time. We reach over 30 million downloads a year just on our shows. It doesn't count all of the other subsidiary things we have broken off. We have a tech break feed that provides that quick tech hit for those that just want their tech in short sound bites. And during the pandemic, we've launched Club Twit because we do have fans, as you know, that are security focused and they don't want to be tracked. And we are an ad supported network. So we've launched Club Twit to provide people with all of our content ad free and a Discord room. And we do a few extra special fun things there. So Twit was really founded to cater to people in tech and the tech enthusiast. And that's what we do. We really focus on that. And all of our hosts are journalists. And if they're not journalists, they work in the field because sometimes that's what you need. And we love what we do and we love super serving our audience.
Now, how long has Twit been going?
Twit was founded in 2005. So I'd say we're one of the first podcast networks that was out there. And we pretty much have stayed true to our roots and what we do. The only exception is we've always been audio, but we've added video to all of our shows. And we've just done a better job in curating our content to really just super serve everybody.
Okay. I'm a fan of Twit, have been since its beginning when you were in the brick house. So my question is, when you do live, do you then edit the audio in the podcast?
To answer your question, how do we put out our podcast? The answer is no, we just don't put out our podcast. I consider us the gold standard in podcasting. We super serve our audience by, of course, recording it live to tape, but then we do take the time to go through it. We edit it. We triple check our commercials because we do sell ads within the content of our shows. I'd like to knock on wood because we haven't had a mistake in 2 years in releasing our shows. We're very careful in making sure that the ads are correct, that the content is accurate, that we have the right lower thirds on everything. Because when you have that visual component, it really takes a lot longer to edit a show just to make sure that you have everything in it that you need to have there. So we record everything. It goes to an editor. They actually take the time to edit every single show. The producer then double checks. Then we have a continuity person that comes in and does a final check before the show is published. And then once the show is published, because we publish everywhere, we then have to check the feeds to make sure nothing broke publishing to the thousands of different platforms that we publish to. It's quite an intricate process, but I think we've mastered having fewer people behind the camera than in front of the camera. A lot of studios, I go into TV studios, there's 50 people working, there's 3 people in front of the camera. You go into our studio, there'll be 4 people in front of the camera and 2 people running it to make it all work. So we've spent a long time really figuring out how to lock down cameras so we can just switch to cameras and have one technical director and one producer, of course, watching the show. Our biggest show is Twit. We record it on Sundays. It's roughly 2 to 2.5 hours long, and that's probably our longest show. It runs 2 hours, sometimes 2.5 hours. So it depends on the nature of the show. A show like iOS Today, it's highly visual. 50% of our audience watches that show. So with that show, the edit can take longer because we're showing tips and tricks on iOS. So it depends on the nature of the show, on how long it takes to edit. We're pretty careful in that we try to follow the format of the show so the ads are done within the body of the show. So it takes less time to edit and push out the show. But a show can take anywhere from 1.5 hours to edit to 4 hours to edit, depending on all the visual components that go into it. And that's what makes it harder than just doing an audio only podcast. If it was audio only, it's super easy just to check it and publish it. But with the visual aspects to our shows, it does take longer. So it just depends on the show. And then if the producer finds something, we may have to pull back in the host to pre-record something differently before we can publish a show. We're really blessed with an amazing team. We're a very small network.
Yeah.
We only have 15 full-time employees, but we work with a lot of independent contractors.
You said earlier, you've got 13, you flexed at one point up to 20.
Yes.
Tell me, what is the criteria? Where's your cutoff line? Is it that you've got 10,000 people, 100,000 people? Is there a number? Or we don't think that show's working?
I would say it's a combination of a few things. Number one is that if the audience isn't growing, then yes, that is something we'll take a look at and we'll see, is the content not correct? Is it the host? What are we doing? Should we do more promotion around it? We take a look at a few things before we actually just go in. Typically for us, most podcasters are happy if they get to 2,000 to 3,000 downloads per episode. They're like, ooh, we made it. For us, the benchmark is typically around 10,000. We like to see a podcast get to that, but we will give it time to actually grow. And then we also see if it's palatable to, you know, sponsors. Can we get sponsorship to help support the shows? Because when you're ad supported, it's really dependent upon, can I find an advertiser for this show? So sometimes too, we keep shows just because it's the right show to have on our network. It's super serving our audience. So even if the show's not fully paying for itself, the rest of the network can, and it's a show we should definitely keep. So I wouldn't say it's as cut as dry as to just go, oh, is the show making it or not making it? But definitely 10,000 is typically where we want to hit with an audience. And then that will definitely be where we want to be to make sure that it's something we can keep going. And how we look for content is we pull our audience once a year. That survey's coming up in January. We're extremely careful about not invading our audience's privacy. It's super, super important for us. People want us to put pixels all over our website. They want to track our audience to this horrible degree. And we're like, no. So once a year, we honestly put out a survey and we ask our audience, hey, would you tell us a little bit about you that we need for going out to pitch advertisers? But we also ask our audience, what would you like to see? What are your favorite shows? What can we do better? So that's where we get our feedback from our audience. And believe it or not, we get about 10,000 responses within a few weeks. I typically cut the survey off then because I want to just get that metrics in and take a look at what we can do. And that's where we find out, like, hey, what are you interested in? And I'm excited to say we have a new show that we're going to be launching in Q1. And as soon as we have everything worked out, we'll be announcing it. But our goal is to launch it the first week of the month. So we're going to start teasing that out a little bit. And we're starting to get back in growth mode. Now that the pandemic hit, I think everybody felt that, especially ad-supported networks. And so we're just now finally stabilizing after the pandemic, and it's time to start growing and ratcheting up our network.
Okay. One of my questions was going to be, how do you see 2022? Clearly, you see it very positively. I know Leo reads ads at the beginning of the show and through the show. Do you also use dynamic ad insertion? Have you moved over to that as a format?
We haven't moved over to that, but I have added it to enhance our network. When the pandemic hit, I lost 70% of our advertisers in 2 weeks. Was brutal. And it made me realize we were too one-dimensional. We think our host read ads are the best. I will admit we are probably one of the highest podcast networks in the industry, but we actually do an amazing job for our sponsors. There's a goodie bag around it. We only sign sponsors that fit our audience. So having said that, we prefer embedded ads. We feel they do the best. However, the pandemic did teach me a few things. So we have added a partnership with Megaphone. So we do allow them on the back end to dynamically insert ads that they sell. I haven't started selling it yet. So if we have unsold inventory in our audio feeds only, they flow through Megaphone and we've allowed them to sell them with strict parameters around what advertisers they can partner with, et cetera. And so we've had some residual income coming in on that, and that's been helpful. But every year I look at switching fully to dynamic ad insertion, and I honestly don't see the benefit for what we do and for what we do for our partners doing that. We over deliver on our ad reads. We don't under deliver. We have a 2 ad model per episode that a lot of people don't do. And the unaided recall is 65 to 80% higher because of it. We do less advertisers, but 2 ads for each advertiser. And we just find that ad model has surpassed the 1 ad per episode and the dynamic ad insertion. And I actually own an agency, so I've bought for several other clients across the board. Our ad model has outshined anything else I've tested in the market. So yes, we are touching dynamic ad insertion, but it's really for residual income for unsold inventory on our podcast. So it's not something we have put front and center.
So could you tell us what sort of CPM rates you're charging? Because the industry right now, I think there's around $23 CPMs.
I'm not sure where it's going to go. I've seen a lot of fluctuation in the markets. I partner with a lot of our other networks. We share rate cards. We talk about what other people are doing in the industry. And we start at a $20 CPM and our highest show is at a $50. And that is for one ad. Then we have a two ad model. So if you really look at the effective CPM, it's probably between $40 and $100. So we are not at base model of where podcasts are, but I have partners that have been on our network since inception. And we have partners that have been on our network for 5, 6, 7, 8 years that continue to renew with us because of the quality of what we do. Honestly, it's our audience too. We have the qualified audience. Mm-hmm. And as they're continuing to introduce new services and features and benefits, a long-term partnership with us resonates and our audience is continuing to go to those partners. So yeah, we're not at the bottom at all. I have looked around at all the other kits. We're in the top tier of what people charge for podcasting. And we pretty much sell out. We're sold out for this year. I think Q1 will be sold out probably by the end of November. And the upfront sales are already underway. We've already sold about 1.5 million for next year. And my target for next year is 7 to 8 million, depending if I can sell naming rights or not.
In terms of your split, how big is your audience now internationally? Is that a growing audience for you or is it mainly US?
No, our audience is growing in the US and internationally. We're roughly 70 to 75% in the US, depending on the show. And internationally, it's about 25 to 30%. I will say the bulk of the downloads are in Canada, UK, Australia. So English speaking countries probably make up 95% of our downloads and then 5% everywhere else. I will partner with pretty much anyone. We partnered with Audible doing a few of our podcasts that they were putting in different languages in like Chinese and Russian and a few other things like that. As markets open up, I definitely want my audience to continue to grow elsewhere, but we're mostly in English speaking countries and we've been growing pretty regularly across all countries. So it's still roughly about that split.
Couple of questions, Lisa. Twitter Spaces, live audio, Clubhouse, that sort of thing. Is that an area that you guys are looking into as another platform maybe to broadcast on?
We've watched Clubhouse grow and dabble, and I think we pirated from that. So if people are looking for that kind of Clubhouse environment, we have that with our Twit Club that we've launched. So we have a Discord channel in our Club Twit. And within that, I will do an inside Twit with Leo, give a state of where Twit's at, where we're going. So we'll do that for our club. We're doing a book club today with Stacey Higginbotham on This Week in Google. She's doing a book club in Club Twit. We also have, within that club, we do an open source show on Saturdays. So there's all kinds of activities going in there that's very similar to what Clubhouse is doing. So I think that's probably the platform we're going to be doing those one-offs in. So we're added that community because we have fans that just like they want to hang out with us and they want to do things with us just like Clubhouse. So that's why we created that. So I would say we're not going to go to a Clubhouse platform. We've been actually doing that within our own club.
So are you planning to do live events again now that COVID is under control?
I would say we're skipping CES in 2022 for next year. I think it's still a little too soon. I want to make sure our staff is protected. We do have people with some compromised immune systems here. So eventually we will want to reopen to the public at some point next year. We're not sure when. We're definitely going to play it by ear. And yes, I am dying to get out to a live event. I am tired of Zoom boxes. I'm tired of seeing people virtually. It's like when I see people now, I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot how tall you were. Things like that. So yes, we would love to do some live events and get back out in the public. And as soon as we feel it's safe, we're definitely going to do that. Probably next summer, I would like to have something where we can open the studio and just invite all of our fans to come in. And yes, we would love to do more live events again. So okay. It's definitely on the horizon, but we're in this, you know, wait and see.
So my final question is, when are you going to sell Twit? Or is it so much Leo is Twit, therefore it makes it hard to sell?
We did entertain that. We were looking, we had quite a few partners reaching out to us before the pandemic hit and saying, hey, we're interested. And, you know, we've looked at a few of those deals and consider it, but we feel like if that happens and we lose what I feel the magic of Twit is. And yes, Leo, he may not be thrilled I'm saying this, but he turned 65 this year, as a matter of fact, in a couple of weeks. And we have already pivoted him off of a few shows. So I think our long-term goal with Twit is Leo will always want to broadcast. I can't see Leo retiring entirely ever, to be honest with you. And I wouldn't want him to. He loves it. I've never met a person who loves entertaining and giving back to his fans more than this man. So he will always want to do something. So our goal for Twit is to replace Leo and start pulling him out of more and more shows until he's ready to finally step back entirely. So I feel we have hired some amazing people. We have Jason Howell on our network. I'm looking at him to take over some things. Micah Sargent joined us a couple of years ago. We're grooming him to do things. I have my eyes on a few other people and they know who they are. We've been in discussions, and our entire intent will probably be to allow Leo to start to pull back and then bring in hosts that will want to take over the shows, as well as, you know, we have some other hosts that have partnered with Leo for years that wanting to retire at some point. And so we'll be looking for those hosts as well. So I think it would be our long-term goal to keep Twit and grow it within the hosts we have, add a few more hosts and possibly stay independent. There's not that many independent podcast networks anymore. Everybody is sold or has gone somewhere. And we like the control. We can try things and we can test things. And I don't think you get that if you are partnered with somebody who's all about the bottom line. And so I don't know. I can't say we would say no if the right opportunity came out, but it's really not our goal. Our goal is to continue to super serve this particular niche audience. And that's what we want to do.
Brilliant. Lisa Laporte, CEO of the Twit Network. Thank you so much.
Oh, it was a pleasure to be here. And tell everyone, just check us out, twit.tv. Our content's free to everyone and anyone that has an internet connection. And if you decide I really want something more, join Club Twit. It's $7.
Brilliant. Thanks, Lisa.
Lisa Laporte from the twit.tv podcast network. Leo Laporte actually followed me this week on Twitter, which I was thrilled by because I am quite a fan. I did consider making a skinned version of podnews.net and calling it netcastnews.net, but sadly somebody had bought netcastnews.net, so I couldn't do that, and that would have been frankly 2 hours for a 20 second gag. Leo, of course, went through a stage of wanting to call them all netcasts, which was a brave thing to do, and sometimes brave things don't work. But I'm a massive fan of Leo, so great to see him following me on Twitter.
Yeah, the original strapline was "Netcast you love from the people you trust."
That's right, except in Leo's voice, which is a little bit more impressive.
Thanks.
Indeed.
Yeah. I'm not available for voiceovers. That I just thought I'd mention that.
Indeed. So, what are you listening to at the moment, then, Sam?
I've been listening to a couple of podcasts that you recommended. Actually, the first one was The Last Days of Maradona, and I thought I'd listen to it because it's the first ever Spotify to launch in 6 markets simultaneously. They've done something quite interesting. They've partnered up with various hosts in various markets to talk about Maradona, and it struck me that you've got Thierry Henry, the famous French footballer, and I didn't recognise many of the others, though, that they clearly are famous in their own countries. But what is this launch in 6 markets simultaneously? It sounded interesting, so that's why I thought I'd have a dip in.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because it's the first ever Spotify launch in 6 markets. It is not just a bunch of shows which have been translated into different languages, which is the Wondery way of doing things, or was the original Wondery way of doing things. This is 6 markets simultaneously, and each of the hosts have done their own work as well, to put their own spin on things. So Thierry Henry, of course, does it both in France and in the UK, because, of course, he's a very well-known UK player as well. But then, of course, you've got, an Argentina football player who's been doing some stuff for Spain and Latin America. You've got a Brazilian journalist and an Italian actor and so on and so forth. And I just thought it was a very interesting thing. One of the things I keep on talking about in terms of international expansion is not to just do a automated transcript version, or just to get a local voice actor to do some of the parts, but to actually put a bit of your own culture into it. So it's interesting seeing that Spotify have been doing that sort of thing.
That must have taken a lot of budget to produce that one.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. I'm absolutely sure it did. you know, but I think that's one of the benefits of Spotify's $3.5 billion, that they can do some large things like that. It's produced by Adonde Media, and Adonde Media is one of the perfect companies to do this sort of thing. They've done a bunch of these sorts of things in the past. So really good to see a bit more of that going on.
James, that's about it for this week. But before we do go, what else has happened for you in Podland?
Oh, so I ended up this morning, I ended up driving with my microphone and my headphones to find a quiet car park somewhere, because there's a lot of renovation going on in this house, lots of walls being taken down and all of that. And I needed somewhere quiet to record the Sound Off podcast. What I learned, which is with Matt Cundall, which comes out, I think, next week, what I learned is that driving up to the top of a hill may be a nice quiet place in terms of parking, but it isn't a very good place in terms of mobile reception, because you're at the top of a hill, you've got lots of coverage, yes, but it's all useless coverage, because as soon as you try using it, it doesn't work. So I ended up having to drive most of the way down the hill again. I found this brilliant car park, which was it's normally full over the weekend of weekend walkers. It was just me and one other car, and I thought, this is great, and there's coverage here, I'm in proper 5G coverage here, so this is great. It's perfect, there's just one other car, and they're all the way over there. And as soon as I started getting my microphone out and everything else, then all of a sudden the sound of the saxophone from the other car started, and it was a guy who was practicing his saxophone. And bless him, he was doing it in the middle of nowhere so that he didn't annoy the neighbours. And of course, the one neighbour he was annoying was me. So yeah, so that was fun. So I'll be on the Sound Off podcast with Matt Cundall next week, which is a Canadian podcast all about radio and podcasting. And I was also on Radio New Zealand over the weekend, where essentially I was shouted at by an old lady who was very upset that 20 years ago I had invented the first streaming radio app. And apparently radio's demise is all my fault.
Oh, right.
So that was an enjoyable 23 minutes. What's happened for you over the last week, and what's happening for you over the next few weeks, Sam Sethi?
Well, I still can't tell you why I went to Manchester, but all I can tell you is my liver was destroyed at 4 a.m. There's a story there.
Oh, okay.
But that's between you and I, James, and no one else needs to know. I did buy two of the new Rode Lavier mics. They brought out Lavier 2. And they're great little mics that go on the end of your iPhone if you want to do outdoor broadcast recording or interviews.
Yeah, no, they do look very smart. The Lavalier, I never know how to pronounce it, Lavalier. Anyway, those ones that you clip onto your clothes, yes. They do look very smart. $99 US dollars. It's a smart thing, and an Australian company. So good on them. And that's it for this week. Thank you to Lisa Laporte and Franco Solerio for being our excellent guests. I should tell you, next week, if you are a fan of understanding how music licensing works, my goodness, we've got a guest for you. Winslow Bright will be on. She does that sort of thing for a living. And it's a great listen. So look out for that.
Please follow Podland in your podcast app and on Twitter at Podland News. You can also find previous shows on the web at www.podland.news.
If you want daily news, you should get Pod News. The newsletter's free at podnews.net. The podcast can be found in your podcast app, and all the stories we've discussed on Podland today are in the show notes, and we use chapters too.
Our music is from Ignite Jingles, and we're hosted and sponsored by our good friends at Buzzsprout.
Keep listening.